Islam, worship, feminism, pietism, postmodernism. You can meet and hear Issues Etc. regular guests discussing these topics at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 14th and 15th in Collinsville, Illinois. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Registration is $100 per person. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 14 and 15 in Collinsville, Illinois. issuesetc.org.
I was raised Catholic, and I remember my first communion, but I do not practice now. I'm ecumenical, and I'm not alone. Many people I know who were raised Catholic no longer attend Mass, and many aren't raising their children Catholic either, whether it's because of the sex scandal, the church's views on women, perhaps its openness to other ideas like homosexuality. The Catholic Church has a lot of issues, but it does a lot of good for a lot of people. And I bet there are a lot of people who might return to the church if it changed. After tonight's celebrations are over, the big question will be whether Pope Francis will be that change.
That's Erin Burnett of CNN closing her program last night and opining about what she would like to see from the new Pope and the Roman Catholic Church. I imagine many share her opinion. Perhaps not all, but many do. The real question here is if that's kind of typical of the Catholic reporter saying, the reporter who's a lapsed Catholic saying, this is my reaction to the new Pope. How was the rest of the media coverage of the Pope yesterday being announced? Francis stands on the balcony and the media, all of the media, is watching him. How did they cover the story? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. We're coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in on this Thursday afternoon. We'll be talking with Terry Mattingly about media coverage of the new Pope. Dr. Uwe Simonetto will join us a little bit later to talk about Roman Catholicism in Europe. And then it's our pastor's roundtable. We'll be in Luke chapter 20, right before Jesus' passion. He tells the parable of the wicked tenants, and he talks about paying taxes to Caesar as well. Pastor Bruce Kaseman, Pastor Mark Bestel will be our guests. Terry Mattingly is a regular guest. He's director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. He writes the weekly On Religion column for Scripps Howard News Service, and he's founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here.
Let's talk first about the live coverage, and this was something that pushed everything off of television and the internet for about 6 hours. What did you make of the live coverage of the announcement of the new Pope?
Well, I thought it was interesting in the sense that the announcement itself had some actual interesting content to it. And some people got some of that, you know, and quite frankly, some of them really didn't. For example, a lot of people were said things like, oh, there's something unique, there's something different about his clothing. And what they never got back around to was that, in effect, he chose to make his first appearance as Pope not dressed with kind of like this very elaborate ermine fancy ceremonial stole. Instead, he came out dressed as a working Pope. Or he came out basically in as plain a clothes as a Pope is allowed to wear.
Street clothes.
Papal street clothes. I mean, and so a lot of people, they knew something was going on, or they heard priests say something was going on, but I never heard anybody really got it on there clear. But in terms of theology, in terms of what he said, did you get to watch any of it?
I did. I watched it all live.
Okay. Well, then you heard the same thing I did, which was you heard people say over and over that the Pope came out, and after he did, you know, the request for prayer for retired Pope Benedict the 16th, he said, you know, but before, you heard it translated, before I bless you, I want you to bless me, right? You heard that?
That's what I heard in the translation.
That's kind of the universal translation. That when they finally got some priests on and some other people who kind of knew what was going on, you began to hear a different translation. And I actually thought what he said was fascinating, because the media reporters interpreted this as kind of not just a thing of humility. They interpreted it as some sort of like egalitarian gesture. In other words, you expect the Pope to bless you, but first I want you to bless me. The actual language he used, and the formal translation is out now, and now I would like to give the blessing, but first I want to ask you a favor. Before the bishop blesses the people, I ask that you would pray to the Lord to bless me. The prayer of the people for their bishop. Let us say this prayer, your prayer for me in silence. Well, theologically, there's a whole lot of difference between I want you to bless me and saying, I ask that you would pray to the Lord to bless me. Who gets left out of it in that first paraphrase?
And it does have a distinctly different flavor than that kind of forced egalitarianism, like, oh, finally a pope who considers himself not part of the hierarchy.
Well, almost a kind of, like, we wanted so badly to hear something that we thought sounded like Vatican II, or what we think Vatican II said, like the people are going to bless me. Well, no, I mean, the people are going to pray for me to be blessed. And we know in, you know, traditional Christian theology, who is the only person who can bless, which is God. So I thought that was fascinating. Very few people knew this guy was coming. I only heard the whole evening one or two people that claimed to have picked him. And of course, as always, John L. Allen Jr. at the National Catholic Reporter, who I think is the greatest reporter on Catholic affairs in the English language at this moment, he did not pick this guy, but he included him in his short list of potential popes, which is maybe the only person who put this particular cardinal into that short list. And what would, good Lord, where would CNN have been without John Allen on the air? He was so far and away the star of their coverage if you were looking for anything resembling information. The other moment that I mentioned in a blog I put up this morning that really struck me, it kind of came to stand for all of the Chris Matthews and the kind of the world of liberal Catholics and ex-Catholics and nuns who used to be Catholics who are now atheists and Catholic priests who are now Episcopal priests and all the other folks that represented the left side of the spectrum in the commentary last night, was a fascinating moment, a soundbite at the end of the show that's led by Aaron Burnett on CNN. And I kind of jumped when at about 7:40 in the evening she made this comment that she was making this statement of opinion as a Catholic, and then immediately kind of glanced at the camera and said, oh, yes, and I am a Catholic. And then later, when she signed off at the end, there's this amazing moment where she talks about the fact that she was baptized Catholic, she was confirmed Catholic, she keeps a picture on her desk of herself and her white dress from the day of First Communion, but then she says, but I do not practice now, I'm ecumenical, and I'm not alone. And then she goes into this litany of things the Church has done wrong, all of which are related to sexuality and gender. And at the end she says, I bet that a lot of people might return to church if it changed. After tonight's celebrations are over, the big question will be whether Pope Francis will be that change. And that's how she signed off her show. And a lot of people, I'm sure, were very upset about that. I thought to some degree it was candid for her to go ahead and admit what her perspective was. But, of course, for anyone who follows religion in American life and European life, the ultimate irony of this is what she's calling for, essentially, is for the Catholic Church to become a liberal mainline Protestant church, which are among the fastest declining religious institutions in our society. I mean, if this formula worked, then the Episcopal Church would be blowing the doors out right now. And so anyone who has studied the world of liberal mainline Protestantism knows that there are some pretty huge ironies behind the approach that she took to the story, and quite frankly, lots of other reporters took to the story last night live on the air.
One more question on the live coverage, and this was only my viewing experience. I was watching CBS. In that lull of time, about an hour and 15 minutes between the white smoke and the appearance of Francis on the balcony, they were looking for English-speaking people in St. Peter's Square to interview, and they found a couple, but the first they found were a couple women, oddly enough. They're advocating with pins on their lapels for the ordination of female priests. Then they proceeded for 5 minutes to talk with one of their correspondents about the possibility of a future female pope, which seems to me kind of the quintessence of missing the story they're there to cover.
Well, I mean, I saw it might even be the same trio of women appeared on several networks. They might have had somebody going around contacting producers to get them on the air. And you know what? I really didn't mind them being on the air because most of the networks also had some balancing voices from, you know, practicing traditional Catholics as well. To me, the degree to which the talking heads that are lined up for editorial commentary, to some degree, you expect that to be about 50-50. And that didn't offend me. What offended me was how the people who were actually guiding the newscasts tended to frame a lot of the issues. And by halfway through the evening, to their credit, and I don't know that this is what happened, but I wouldn't be at all surprised if some of the personnel related to the quite good CNN Faith blog, Eric Maripati and his team, I wouldn't be at all surprised if they were behind this. They were not only correcting people on the air who said the Pope was the first non-European Pope, of which the accurate statement, he's the first non-European Pope in a millennium. Forget St. Peter for a second, who wasn't exactly European. There were plenty of non-European popes, you know, in the first, say, 800 years of church life. They began correcting that. And then also it suddenly hit somebody in the production crew that the word reform was being used in a very particular way, that the Catholic speakers who were coming on, the traditional Catholic speakers were coming on and saying, I believe this man is a man of reform, and he's going to come in and help reform the church and rebuild the church and reform the church. And then people like the three women you were talking about were coming on and saying, we need to reform the church. We need to reform what the church teaches about doctrine. And about halfway through the evening, they finally hit them that this word reform was leaning in a particular direction. That one group was saying that, you know, like, say, the Curia has some problems with being cut off from the church, improper administration, obviously the clergy abuse crisis, that there were needs to reform the structures of the church, while the other was talking about reforming the doctrines of the church that they happened to disagree with. And the word reform was being used by the commentators and by the journalists in the second sense, while most of the people they were interviewing were actually using reform in the first sense. Did you notice that? Did you notice the reform word battles going on?
I was, as someone who has kind of a vested interest in the definition of that term from the Lutheran Reformation, I was very interested as to how they were defining it. Yes.
Yeah, because like one time that they actually had a blurb that went up on CNN, and this is before the Pope was elected. They had this, you know, Anderson Cooper, the Catholic Church today, celibacy or reform? And I thought, whoa, wait a minute. So what does the word reform mean in that sequence, which means there's no arguments whatsoever for this tradition of celibate priests in the West? Now, personally, as an Eastern Christian myself, you know, I believe in a married priesthood. That's as an option within the church. In Eastern Orthodoxy, our priests are almost all married, but our bishops are celibates because they come out of monasteries for the most part. And there's a long tradition of the bishops kind of being the confessors and the pastors to the priests. I mean, I'm not a big, huge fan of mandatory clerical celibacy, but don't you think it's a little loaded? You know, the Catholic Church, celibacy or reform? That's a perfect example of how the word reform was being used during much of the coverage.
Terry Mattingly is our guest talking about media coverage of the new Pope. When we come back, what did he make of the print coverage of the Pope's announcement? Stay tuned.
Issues, etc. regular guest Dr. Stephen Hine on the Consortium on Classical and Lutheran Education Conference, July 16th through the 18th in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
The Consortium for Classical and Lutheran Education wishes to invite all Issues, etc. listeners to its 13th annual conference hosted by Concordia Theological Seminary this July 16th through the 18th. For the first time, we will be featuring 3-day intensive in-service opportunities in such areas as teaching Latin, classroom design and management, Christian and non-Christian worldviews, classical Lutheran pedagogy. Please join us for our best conference yet.
You can find out more about the Consortium on Classical and Lutheran Education Conference, July 16th through the 18th in Fort Wayne, Indiana, at ccle.org, ccle.org.
Smartest listeners in radio, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Pastor Todd, I downloaded your Issues Etc. app for my Android phone, and I listen to it while I'm on the treadmill.
You can listen to Issues Etc. live or on demand with the new Issues Etc. Android or iPhone app. You can download these apps at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. in the palm of your hand. Download an app today.
My new Adam really enjoys the app while I'm on the treadmill.
If Issues Etc. refuses to scratch your itchy ears and scratches your old scabs instead, and you love them for it, then Redeemer Lutheran Church is the church in Fort Wayne for you. The only real difference between Issues Etc. and Redeemer is that Todd and Jeff only talk about Jesus. We talk about Jesus, but we also put him into people's mouths. We drive off demons with water. We are the church, and yes, we serve Jell-O in the basement.
Welcome back. This is Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Thursday afternoon, March the 14th, we're talking to Terry Mattingly about media coverage of the new Pope. Well, we talked about the live coverage, Terry. Let's turn to print. What did you make of the headlines and the leads in the last 24 hours?
Well, a friend of mine summed it all up by saying the headlines basically were, "The new Pope, dang it, he's Catholic," you know, would be like the summary of all this. A lot of the coverage, the New York Times in particular, struck me as essentially saying the same thing that you and I have discussed so many times. We take whatever this Pope has said or done and we apply it to issues that we have defined essentially as political issues. And that would still, to me, be kind of the dominant theme that I saw running through a lot of the coverage. There's been so much of the coverage, I'll tell you really frankly, that I haven't had a chance to look at it all yet. I focused my attention when I first came into the office this morning on the New York Times and then the kind of instant cover at Time Magazine. And as I noted in the article, the Time Magazine cover has one or two kind of glaring glitches or laugh-out-loud moments in it. But for the most part, it took a more global view of this Pope instead of assuming that the most important thing about there being a new Pope is how it will affect America or North America, or even the United States of America, or even like 10 powerful zip codes in America. They actually, Time, managed to pull off an old-fashioned Time story that took more of a global look at the importance of this man. And the listeners would be interested in knowing the Time cover dedicates a lot of time to the secular and Pentecostal and Protestant threats to Catholic power in Latin and South America, and how having a Latin American Pope might affect some of those dynamics. And from my perspective, that's exactly what's most interesting about this. Can you imagine what World Youth Day is going to be like this coming summer in Buenos Aires? Do you think anybody's going to show up to welcome the first Latin American Pope? That, you know, there was that moment when Pope John Paul II went back to Poland for the first time. And researchers indicate that they think perhaps as many as 25% of the entire Polish population saw him with their own eyes in person. You know, either driving by, waving, at a mass, at a park, at a speech, something that, I cannot imagine what kind of a crowd they're going to have to get ready for when this guy goes back to South America.
I want you to explore something a little more, and this has to do with the New York Times headline, where the term conventional and the term Vatican line were both used. What were your concerns there?
Well, the main thing is Vatican line, it's like there isn't a set of Catholic doctrine. There's the Vatican's line on Catholic doctrine. Like, this isn't what the Catholic Church teaches. This is what the Vatican teaches. In the post I put up this morning, here's how I put it. From this point of view, the key is that the Vatican, the papacy, the catechism and the actual written teachings of centuries of church councils are merely one approach to what it means to be a Catholic. In other words, that, you know, a former Catholic who's an editor at the New York Times, his view of what it means to be a Catholic has as much doctrinal validity as what this newly elected Pope's approach is, as if the Catholic Church was a Protestant church, which seems to me to be the template that lays over all of this, which is the Catholic Church should become what some sort of majority vote system. So is this guy going to be the reform pope who reforms all that out-of-date doctrine, or is he just going to toe the Vatican line as if the Vatican doesn't have anything to do with defining Catholic authority and doctrine?
What did you make of in the midst of all the 24-hour news cycle, you need to fill in a lot of gaps.
Right.
And there was an awful lot of coverage of the papacy as an institution. What was your reaction there?
Well, I mean, if they get the facts right, that's fine. I mean, let's face it, it's an amazing institution. You know, in the ancient church for the first millennium, the Pope was the first among equals of the ancient patriarchs. I mean, even the Eastern Orthodox would acknowledge that. So the papacy is an amazing institution. It's been through tremendous difficulties. I was telling a friend of mine yesterday, I don't know who had a rougher time in life when you consider that John Paul II had to face the communists and the Nazis, you know, when he was growing up. Then meanwhile, you have Benedict had to compete with the Nazis as a young man, but he had to face German academia. I don't know which would be worse. You know, this whole idea that the papacy is a modern political chair, that seems to be the template, and I can't get over that. I can't get over the fact that so many journalists, it's like they wanted to hold pre-election polls and they wanted to have papal primaries, and you know, they wanted to treat it like it was the Sweet 16 in basketball. That there were debates going on somewhere behind doors where they were all arguing polling data, you know, from Gallup about what we want out of a pope, as if that really was the process with which you pick a leader of the Catholic Church. There's a part of me that still can't get over the fact that we're going to let that template drive our coverage.
This seems to be a prime opportunity for someone to sit down, do some research, and write the story that you often talk about in our conversations when it comes to issues of being Catholic in America. Write that story about what it really means to be and what we mean when we say the word Catholic.
Well, yeah, I did a post about that a couple of days ago when that thing came out from, who was it? It was the Washington Post, and was it ABC News that did the new poll? And the headlines were, Catholics think the church needs to change. And I thought, to some degree, once again, they forgot that not everybody who calls themselves a Catholic is practicing the sacramental Catholic faith to the same degree. Once again, when they dug inside those numbers, you had a chance to see that the people who actually go to Mass each week have radically different views of doctrines, politics, and the state of the Catholic Church than people who haven't gone in years, who go once a year, or who go to weddings or go to baptisms when somebody in their, you know, when a baby's born in their family. You just can't assume that the word Catholic means any one thing in particular. But you would have to think that bishops and cardinals and others who know this data and know it inside out have to take the views of the people who are actually attending Mass, who are actually producing children who are interested in serving the church in everything from being missionaries to permanent deacons to sisters and priests. You've got to think that they're taking the views of the active Catholics more seriously. The problem is that our media assumes that all of these Catholics have equal standing in the life and the decisions of the Roman Catholic Church and don't divide that out as much. The Washington Post ABC poll, when you dug inside of it, actually had some pretty interesting numbers in there. And I'm hoping that somebody's going to fuel up the machine at the Pew Forum and do some sort of much more nuanced study now after we've gone a couple of months into the papacy of Pope Francis.
So if you were grading it as journalism students, to use a rough analogy, with only about a minute here, Terry, so far, with only one day, 24 hours elapsed, how would you grade the coverage of the election and the announcement of the new pope so far?
Well, I'd give most of CNN last night, I'd give some of it as high as a B- or something like, because of Anderson Cooper did a pretty good job of staying straight onto the story. The Time cover, I'd give it a solid B, even B plus. And then most of the other stuff, we're just rolling along in D or C territory.
Terry Mattingly is director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. He writes the weekly On Religion column for Scripps Howard News Service, and he is founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thank you very much.
Glad to be here, and remind everybody to go see that John L. Allen coverage. That's the guy they want to read.
When we come back, Dr. Uwe Simonetto joins us. We're going to be talking about Roman Catholicism in Europe. I don't think it's any surprise to anybody, especially with the election of a new pope, that the influence of Roman Catholicism in Europe is drastically waning. The last pope, Benedict XVI, tried to shore that up. It's a task. What do you do when you have a region that has been historically not just tied but married to the Roman Catholic Church in terms of history? The two histories go together. What do you do when that is no longer true? Uwe Simonetto will be our guest. This is Issues Etc. We'll be right back.
Imagine SteadfastLutherans.org as the internet version of your neighborhood pub. Your neighborhood confessional Lutheran pub, that is, where the finest in Lutheran conversation is going on at every table and at the bar, sometimes contentious, but always informative and unabashedly Lutheran. We're only serving Wittenberg Ale. We even have a guy named Norm. So check us out. www.steadfastlutherans.org. We'll save a seat at the bar for you.
Does your church need a backup organist? The Virtual Organist service from Church Music Solutions is the next best thing to an on-site organist. Send us your musical choices, including liturgy and hymns. We'll assemble your service and send it to an iPad that controls your church's organ on Sunday. The result is genuine organ leadership on your instrument with your selections when you need it. See our videos on YouTube or visit our website at churchmusicsolutions.com.
Others talk. We have something to say. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Mount Zion Lutheran, Greenfield, Wisconsin. Pilgrim Lutheran, West Bend, Wisconsin. Messiah Lutheran, Lebanon, Illinois. Zion Lutheran, Accident, Maryland. Redeemer Lutheran, Jackson, Wyoming. Messiah Lutheran, Marysville, Washington. Trinity Lutheran, Millstadt, Illinois. Our Savior Lutheran, Houston, Texas. St. Matthew's Lutheran, Bon Terre, Missouri. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Lincoln, Nebraska. Hope Lutheran, St. Louis, Missouri. Trinity Lutheran, Austin, Texas. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Collinsville, Illinois. Luther Memorial Chapel, Shorewood, Wisconsin. Christ Lutheran, Oak Park, Illinois. Bethany Lutheran, Naperville, Illinois. And Emmanuel Lutheran, Dearborn, Michigan. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget at our website, issuesetc.org. Click support. The Issues Etc. 300.